Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is writer Ryan Cady, whose new series, Haunt You to the End, has just been collected in trade paperback from Image Comics, Top Cow, and for a 5-issue limited, I'm going to say horror apocalyptic series, it's very intriguing. The idea of it, a uber rich, ultra rich, crazy old guy wants to find the meaning of life by chasing ghosts. That's the best way I can describe it without spoiling it. So, Ryan, welcome.
Hey, Summer, thanks so much for having me. And that, I mean, there is no better description of it. a weird old rich guy who wants to prove the meaning of life by finding ghosts. That is, isn't that the meaning of life, finding ghosts? I don't know. I'm very scared of death, and that propels this book forward. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
So what was the spark, the inspiration for writing a pre-apocalyptic collapsed ghost hunter story? I mean, it literally is an episode of Ghost Hunters, because this guy hires a disgraced journalist to film an, what did he call it? Excavation.
I'm like annoyingly, that's like the one thing I'm annoyingly proud at in this book, is that I'm like, aha, I came up with a portmanteau for the future. Sci-fi writers love doing that. Look at me, I'm Douglas Adams. And I was like, one, I told someone about it really early on, and they're like, yeah, that's cute. Like appropriately, I was like too excited about the fake word I made up. And I'm like, yeah, that is the reaction when someone makes up a dumb fake word that they're too proud of. So I had characters, I tried to in the first issue, if anybody said it, I would be like, yeah, cute word.
But the fact that he hires a disgraced journalist to video document this expedition to what they believe is a haunted island before the island disappears, because climate change has messed up the weather and the oceans, and there's an incoming rise of the Pacific Ocean that's going to suck under one of the islands. I guess it's one of the Catalina Islands.
Yeah, it's a made up. I was like, we have all those Catalina Islands, and I not to rant really quick, sidebar. Horror, there's like not a lot of California horror. You know, like I feel like horror, especially like eerie horror, ghost horror, like it's like always the East Coast, or like a weird small town in the East Coast, or like the North, and like there's something about California's like weird fake newness that people don't like to set like horror stories here, and there's never creep. And I just feel, as someone who's from here, I'm like, I've been obsessed with horror. I'm like, this place is creepy. Hollywood's creepy. There's ghosts. Like, I'm like, so I don't know. So I wanted to try and, instead of doing the thing where the most haunted island in the world is like, you know, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, or like some old forgotten mining town full of dead people or something, I was like, what if it's, you know, like an island, like right off, like near Hollywood, like it's right there, you know, it can be scary.
Well, we have that setting. We have a deserted industrialist mansion and factory, it looks like. And these people go there. He goes there with a I'm gonna say a mercenary team,
yeah,
a doctor, a priest. I mean, this is a bad, you know, so and so walked into a bar joke setup, and these people aren't taking the ghost side seriously, except for our industrialist, whose name is slipping my mind right now.
Callum Shaw.
Shaw, right, and his priest friend, and you've got the skeptic, who's the journalist, and a medical professional who's got some alternative agenda items on her plate, and before they even land on the island, shenanigans ensue. What What was your thought process behind designing the nature of these ghosts? Because at first I have to say, the artist, Andrea Moody, his art is, I've seen his work in other places, but the specific choice to switch from a standard sort of depiction in the early setups when they're in the city, you know, talking about what the expedition is going to be. But then we get to the island or near the island, and it looks like it switches up to a soft watercolor sort of style. And that adds to the slight, I'm going to say, fraying of sensibilities that everyone experiences when they get to the island. And that is just so cool. So did you guys design that intentionally to enhance the ghosts?
I mean, you have answered the question in the that is where this book comes from. Is like Andrea and I had worked together on my first creator owned series, Infinite Dark, the sci-fi book at Top Cow as well, about like the end of life after the end of the universe and stuff, more Lovecraftian. And it was very like he had a much more like clean line style then. It looked more typical sci-fi. And, you know, we'd talked about working together a lot over the years since that series and, you know, just waiting for the right project. And one day he sent me all these samples of his new watercolor style that he had done for a few books. And I saw it, and it was all stuff that kind of looked like the pages you're talking about, sort of like soft and all these acid greens and these muddy washed out. Like, it was just like really inspiring. And I was like, Andrea, we have to do weather horror. And he was like, what do you mean by weather horror? And I was like, I don't know yet, but we are going to figure it out. And I literally, you know, that happened on like a Thursday, and that weekend I was just like Twitter DMing him and writing all this stuff in like a Google Doc. I'm like, I'm obsessed with death and ghosts. Like, I want to do a ghost story. I've always wanted to do like a classic haunted house story, and we should do that, but we need to find a way to do that, but make it about the weather. So, you know, current events and all that. And so the Haunted to the End was born.
So what was the approach to the, I don't want to, you know, you don't have to stray into spoiler territory, but the approach to the nature of the ghosts sort of enhanced for me the art behind their appearances. And I just thought that was kind of creepy and kind of cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, again, that's, I got to give all credit to Andrea for that. He, you know, I put a lot early on. I made a point of being like, hey, like, I really want the thing you're talking about, the sort of the muddy ruin, the desolation, like everything looks sort of like, I want the ghosts to look like also like debris from this ruined oil derelict. Like, it should all, like, that sort of gross, ancient industrial trash accident vibe should be around the supernatural too. And he immediately was like, I know how to merge those styles, and the ghosts came out looking like that right away. And I really, you're right, like, I can flip to some of those pages and just like stare at those ghosts. I'm like, ah, yes, this is art, Andrea, you've got it. Like,
yeah, the premise that this island is haunted beyond anything else currently on the planet because of the number of people who worked for this company, Rasmussen, who died on those oil derricks in that processing plant, the vast number of people who died there, the fact that so many people died there created a trap, a sinkhole, whatever you want to call it. They're held there. They're still there. They're causing, even the people before they even land on the island, it's affecting them. And the fear that I would have wanted to have invoked isn't quite there, but the gorgeousness of the fear on the faces of the people experiencing this hellscape was a delight because you see them starting to lose it, and they are losing their ability to discern what's real from what's not. They're losing their ability to trust what's going on around them. They can't. And then they're like, wait, we're losing our window of opportunity to get off this island before the sea swallows it up. So there's sort of like a tension and a panic that you see in these people's behavior, especially several who start acting irrationally towards the end there. So that's kind of a fun ride, but I was having so much fun reading the story. I didn't get scared by any part of it, but I think Andrea's work was just too damn pretty.
Honestly, I know I should be like, oh no, but you know, like, I don't know. A lot of horror doesn't outright frighten me either. A lot of it is exactly the thing you're talking about. I'm just sort of like lost in the, and sort of like joyously experiencing the fear characters are feeling, where you're just like, oh, I'm just like excited by what they're going through. But thank you. Yeah. And that first issue you're talking about, and some of those terror faces that he draws, and just the screams and stuff. We could just talk about him all day. Like I could like for like 45 minutes talk about how great Andrea is, and some of the other stuff he's shown me recently, and some of the ideas I pitched him for.
Because he had worked on a story for Zach Kaplan a couple years ago that was absolutely gorgeous. And well, talk about you and Andrea's, I guess, work in putting this together, because I'm going to assume that you had the story mapped out at the very least before discussing how to put it together with the pictures.
For sure. Yeah. And a few things changed, you know, throughout the process, as always with any project, but we had a lot of this pretty much mapped out. You know, I talked early on. I was like, I really want to see these kinds of visuals, and we really want to have moments like this that appear, and he would, you know, sort of come back with these, you know, stylistic choices, and they were all really, really satisfying. And, you know, I think if any part of his art really changed the process, it's that I think we probably spend more time in like the middle part. Like the middle part of the story is a little longer than in my original outline, because I wanted to like explore his vision of the island. Like suddenly I was like seeing all this concept art, and I was like, oh, we need another scene here with these characters like wandering around or doing this or encountering this, because it looks so like I want to jump in there and roll around in it, even though it's a really bad place to be that's about to be destroyed by a big storm. But you know, I think a lot of it was just like trying to one up, set him up for like success. Like I was so into trying to find chances for him to just like draw the coolest thing I could think of for in that moment, in that place. I was so excited to explore that, and like you said, showcase these weird ghosts and this weird style. That, and hopefully I really wanted to have a cathartic experience with my fear of death. You know, I know a lot of writers love to, especially horror writers, are like, I did this whole thing, and I like really explored the thing that scares me, and I put it into the work, and et cetera, et cetera. I hope that has come off authentically in the work. I don't think I've had a cathartic experience. I'm just as scared of all the stuff I was scared of when I started.
So that means you're going to write more ghost stories. Gotcha. Check right there.
Yeah. Annoyingly, now all I'm going to write is like, I'm going to figure it out, guys. I'm going to crack this. More ghosts.
Well, you said you guys talked about what needed to be there for the story. Was this always going to be 5 issues, or did you push it from 4 issues to 5 because you wanted to flesh out the middle of that story?
This is actually the rare, it's usually exactly like you said, you wait and you hold, you get an opportunity. This is the rare thing where I went to Top Cow, and they asked me, they were like, do you want to do 4 issues and sort of see, and if like sales are really good and you're excited, we can do another volume. You know, or do you want to go for 5 and do like tell the story. And I was like, this is a story we have like locked in. We know exactly what the story is. We don't want to do the sort of, I hesitate to say bait and switch, because, you know, it's a good thing to continue series. And I was happy when that's happened with other books I've worked on, but we were like, we don't want to sort of leave this open-ended, or like the possibility of other seasons, or leave hanging storylines. We wanted to tell a clear, concise set thing. It's more that I think in my original draft, the last issue had a lot more like lore, I guess I'd say, and the sort of like more typical explaining. You don't want to explain the why, obviously, right? Everyone's like, the closet door is scarier than what's behind it, and you over explain and it's not scary anymore. But I wanted to kind of, my original draft of the last issue had a lot more like context and like more exposition and explaining stuff. And as we were going through, and I just wanted to spend more time in these places he was designing, I was like, let's just get more evocative with it and go.
Well, for me, the end seems a little open, just a tiny, tiny bit, because we don't know. Does Shaw get back to the mainland? Does the story, we know the story he wanted to tell, you know, proving that ghosts exist, there is something after death, wasn't the story that the footage that was captured was going to tell. And that, you know, those questions are out there. It's like, what happens? I mean, the world is on the verge of literal, total environmental and possibly economic collapse. Mm-hmm. But what does this little bit of data, this information, these secrets, what does that change? What happens? What are the ripple effects from more and more people finding out, hey, this is why our world has become worse to live on than Mars?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, yeah, like for real though. I'm sure in the Hunt You to the End timeline, there is definitely like a couple billionaires on Mars, like in that time period right now, like living in a weird super billionaire villa and dying alone. But yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. And that's what I really want with Maddie's character, the doctor, the UN doctor, and why, you know, that her goal, and, you know, what she feels about the island, and what she feels about what's going on, and this idea of like always fighting and, you know, even to the last, like truth and justice and helping people and always fighting and not going gently is important. And that's why the idea of this character who, even when, you know, the most powerful person in the world, you know, this billionaire is like, well, I've given up, like this planet's fucked, life's over, but I can prove that if I can prove the afterlife's real, then nothing else matters and everything's fine. And it's like, you know, the idea of Maddie as a character is just so much the opposite of that. Like, are you crazy? Like, this matters. Like, who did what matters? Like, fixing what we can matters. Holding people accountable matters. Like, fighting for a better world, even if it seems like we're doomed, still matters. Like, up until the last, we should be trying to make the world better and fighting for that, rather than like hoping against hope that we become ghosts. I hope.
I'm not sure if that's hopeful or bleak or both.
I feel like I live there, you know, like, is it optimistic, half full, half empty some days.
Oh my goodness. And I thought I had mental issues because I'm a cynical optimist.
Oh no, it was cynical optimist.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, it's like everything's all bleak and everything. And then you're like, but it'll get better. Right.
I think it will. Right. Like, I don't know. That first book that Andrea and I did together, Infinite Dark, the base premise is that it takes place after the end of the universe, heat death, you know, entropy happened. But humans, you know, millions of years from now, or whenever physics decrees, it will occur. But in that story, humans survive. They found a way, and the universe has ended, and there's humans on a station, and that exists outside of physics. And everyone was like, wow, Ryan, like, you really came up with like the bleakest thing ever. Like, the universe is ended, everything's gone. And I'm like, that's like my least bleak premise imaginable. Like, we beat heat death. Like, like, that is optimism to me. I'm like, it's optimistic to be like, human beings will somehow conquer, like, the laws of thermodynamics and live on to a new universe. But yes, I do.
And to what end?
The package. Oh, what end? Oh, I don't know. I do think we're really special. I'm actually like a big, I'm pro people. I love us a lot in spite of my bleak horror tendencies and writing about all the worst parts of us. I think we're really special and cool, and I love what we do. Most of the time.
Most of the time. Yeah. It's weird because you're saying, it's like, yeah, we exist beyond ourselves. There are ghosts. And then you have a whole bunch of people who will say, cool, I don't have to stay here anymore. I'm going to check out and go be a ghost. Check that out for a while. And then you have to say, but no, wait, what do you do after you're a ghost?
Yeah. What, you know, and like that's admitting defeat, right? You know, even if that is there and there's that good, comfortable, however, the possibility of more, if death is not the end and you know that, I mean, even though that to me would be like the ultimate comfort, knowing that death is not the end, I don't think that's that's the ultimate sort of hidden conflict between Mr. Shaw, Calum Shaw, the billionaire, and everybody else, is this like, hey man, like, you have the resources, like, even if you're right, like, you should be using your power to try and make things better up until the end, not open the, you know, not be like, hey guys, no, it's cool, I figured out that we could just all commit suicide, right? You know, I think there was, I didn't see this movie, but wasn't there like a Jason Segel movie a few years ago where he like plays a doctor who discovers that death is like, there's an afterlife or something? I feel like there's a trailer I can picture him like going up an escalator or something.
That one doesn't sound familiar, but I there are a couple of movies that explore the exploration of life beyond life, and a couple of them are horror movies.
You got
interesting.
Your Stir of Echoes, your Dragonfly, less beloved.
I thought that was actually kind of cute. Oh, there was
Mrs. Wife.
There was a short film a couple of years ago, and I had interviewed the filmmaker. She had discovered time travel. She had cracked the secret to time travel, and she had gone back in time, because going backward wasn't easy. Going forward was. That's what she cracked. And she said, she went back in time to talk to her old girlfriend, because the reason she made the scientific breakthrough was she focused on her work after her girlfriend dumped her. So she went back in time to tell her girlfriend, don't break up with me, because the world as we know it will end. And she's like, yeah, people are just sick and tired of where we live. Nobody's staying here. They're going, you know, 200, 250 years into the future where things are better. So they're not staying here. So everything's collapsing. So please don't break up with me. And, you know, spoiler alert, the twist is, by going back and talking to her old girlfriend, she's the one that causes the breakup.
That's a really cool. Can you send me that after this? I would.
Yeah,
love to.
I think it's called 11 Minutes. I'll have to double check that. But it was cool little short film. It was at it was part of Etheria Film Festival a couple of years ago, and I just thought it was such a cool premise, because you're like, she's got this look on her face. It's like, oh no, I did this.
It was me.
It was.
Always say what you will about the ancient Greeks, but they knew that it's always our fault. We love to do it. hoist ourselves by our own petard.
Yep. We did it to ourselves. We can't blame anybody else. We did this because there's nobody else here that did it to us. We did it. That whole, you know, angel on one shoulder, devil on the other. I'm like, no, yep. That was you. That was all you. Both sides. So what is it about ghosts, the ghost specifically, that made you make this the element for Haunt You to the End?
Well, it's so part of it is that I was like, I love Haunting of Hill House is probably my favorite book. It's probably, I think, the best prose written in the English language. I don't know, maybe Cormac McCarthy comes close. But I love haunted house stories, but you know, that was a big part of it. But mainly it was just, I was like, yeah, you know, like I am, annoyingly just like, I am like obsessed with, dying. I think about probably at least once a day. I'm like, oh, like I'm going to end one day. And I know that's like, everybody, I think most people are afraid of death, but, I'm just sort of like, it's my big phobia, you know? And so I wanted to sort of really deal with ghosts as the bad guy and tell a ghost story and have people confront their mortality. And to me, we opened the first issue with a quote, when they were making The Shining, in the page, it says like on set, but I think this was a phone call right before they made the movie, and Stanley Kubrick and Stephen King were on the phone. And as most people, I'm sure most of your listeners know, Stephen King is not happy with the movie The Shining, right. As it came out, even though it is by many people considered to be one of the best horror movies ever made. But you know, in advance, they're talking and they get on the phone, and one of the first things Kubrick says very wistfully is, he's like, "Well, you know, it's funny. I never thought ghosts were scary. I always thought ghost stories are really optimistic. Don't you?" And Stephen King is like, "What?" He's like, doesn't get it all. He's like, what do you mean? No, ghosts are scary. And Kubrick's like, no, like, it means there's an afterlife. That's really comforting. So even if ghosts are real, like, you know, even in the scariest situation, you're still comforted by the knowledge that your loved ones are there and this and that. And Stephen King was apparently like, you know, apoplectic. I was just furious that he was like, no, hell's real then, and blah, 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 and like really scared. And again, I love that book. I love a lot of Stephen King books, but I love that movie. But for me, that's the idea of this ghosts. Every all horror exists this way to me, except for kind of what you were talking about earlier, the sort of boring slashers or sort of, but this idea of that, why horror to me is so enticing as well as frightening, is that like, an encounter with something horrific, supernatural, even no matter how terrifying or awful it is, there's this sort of like, hey, whoa, I'm connecting with something beyond here. Like I am having an immortal experience. And like, to me, I think that's what's so beautiful about horror. And I'm always drawn to this, like, even in this situation where like an absolute nightmare is happening, there's a part of you as like a human being who has lived in a flesh and blood, you know, mundane, non-magical world. There's a part of you that's like, this is like, I am having a quasi-religious experience. And I think I'm really drawn to stuff like that. I think that's really, really fascinating.
The mysteries that are not explained by our current understandings and rules of the world and the universe is exactly what draws you in. Okay, I can get that. That's the appeal of the supernatural, the paranormal for a lot of people. It, you know, that it doesn't always go to the horror side, sure. But I think people's impressions of some of that are what fuels the horror side, because they can't understand it. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of it, that the fear of what they're seeing, that they can't, their brains, their education, their knowledge of the world that came before them cannot pigeonhole what they've just seen. And I think that's where one of the true embraces of horror comes from, that sudden intellectual, you know, disconnect, that dissonance, that cognitive dissonance. It's like, I just saw that. What did I see? This doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ghosts, and I'm going to say UFOs, UAPs, other sorts of otherworldly apparitions. What's the funky lights in the swamp? The wisp, the will of the wisps.
Will of the wisp, yeah.
Yeah, they can't explain that. Yeah, swamp gas, right. It's
ball yes. lightning. Yeah. But see, that's the alien stuff though is at least as a kid, I was always I was like more terrified of alien, of the UAP concept, or of the abduction experience, really.
Oh yeah. Everybody's idea. Terrified by that.
This horrible thing, but also like there's no, with aliens, there's no chaser of the supernatural to cut it for you. Like the existence of malevolent or spooky aliens does suggest the existence of, you know, helpful aliens somewhere. But to me, it's sort of like, hey, this bad thing exists and there's no like comforting revelation about it, except it, like, it's just an alien. It abides by our laws. There's nothing, nothing is going to help you here, except it is what it is. I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? I guess.
Yeah. With who was it? I think, I don't know if it was Asimov or Bradbury. I'm drawing a blank now, but one of them says, no, we don't want to attract the attention of, beings that are so far beyond us. Are you kidding me? Stay quiet. Just, you know, we'll keep hiding here in our little corner. Because Earth is, if you look at the maps of the Milky Way, we are in the sticks beyond the boondocks.
Yeah, we're just like little country bumpkins, you know, and we should stay that way. We don't need scary big city industrialists coming in and reworking our planet.
Yeah. If you want to look, check out a very, very well done alien abduction series. There's a 20 episode limited series that was on Sci-Fi Channel about almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
And it's called Taken. Steven Spielberg's Taken.
Oh, that does sound familiar.
It is fascinating. It I think within the past year or two, it finally came back on DVD, and it is entirely fascinating. It follows three generations of families who are involved on two different sides of these alien abductions. And like, it features like a 5-year-old Dakota Fanning. So.
Oh, yay. Okay.
it has a very interesting take explanation for the alien abductions, but still alien abduction stories that we have become aware of are borderline horror stories, especially for the people going through them. And that builds on that, you know, who has experienced what, you know, somebody who's experienced apparitions or full-on hauntings, there's a horrific aspect to that that goes beyond not being able to explain what just happened. And this interpretation of yours of these particular ghosts is horrible.
Thank you. That absolutely a compliment. And that's the other thing is that in earlier drafts, like I said, there's a little more explanation, but I sort of wanted this thing to be like I don't know, man, like what if this is just a psychic tar pit and all this is just horrible impressions, you know? You don't mm-hmm. This might just be a horrible thing that teaches you nothing new about the universe, you know, or as the billionaire hopes, it might be revelatory and optimistic, but like you said, you have to interpret an encounter with the spectral yourself, right? Like you have to deal with that fear and decide what that felt for you.
And your description of it as being a psychic tar pit is apt. You have enough bad things happening in one place. That's a lot of dark energy collecting. Something is bound to pop open or pop over from someplace else and just go, ooh, snack.
Right. Well, it's such a, I don't know, it was such an easy, like, not metaphor, but like obvious one-to-one for like, you know, pollution and like, you know, like oil, like the fact that gasoline is like crude oil is dinosaur bones to a certain extent is like, that's necromancy. I'm like, that's spooky. Like that's ghosts, like necromantic dinosaur blood movement machines is like what we have. And I'm like, that's creepy. Like the idea of the it's sort of, I don't know. It seemed like an easy connection to draw.
Oh my God. The alchemy of fossil fuels being necromancy. Yeah, I have never thought of that before. That is so awesome. That's a door. Oh my goodness.
Don't want to open it.
It's wide open. It's wide open. Okay, so your next story has to be about what happens when, from a psychic alchemic perspective, when we've drained all of the fossil bones, all of the fossil fuels, because the bones are dry now. What happens? Does that set off a cascade of psychic collapse because the bones are empty?
There's no more juice. We're just like floating in an empty psychic space.
The bones are empty.
The bones are empty is a heck of a thing to say. Out of context, people would be like, I'm sorry, what? The bones?
Oh my God. Now I have to run with this. Where will this take me?
People just sort of like staggering, or like, you know, everybody has, you come up on the person when they're having their like vision or they're about to die and they look at you and they say a creepy thing. The bones are empty is a heck of a thing for them to say. That is, a main character would be like, yeah, I don't know, like 5 pages in, this person told me the bones are empty. And I'm like, I'm hung up on that too.
Oh my goodness. That is, it just gave me an idea that now I can't get out of my head, so I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, hell yeah, I'm with it. Oh, it's the best.
So what other haunting stories are you working with? Because that what you said about the psychic tar pit reminded me, because I used to watch all sorts of stories about these, you know, haunted places, like that one forest in Japan where people go to commit suicide. There's one ancient monument or ancient mountain in Australia that all the Aborigines stay away from. It's like, no, don't go there, trust me, you don't want to go there. And there's like a haunted a cenote in Mexico someplace, one of those sunken caves. Yeah. It's like, caving is dangerous, diving is dangerous, diving into submerged caves, it's like, why are we this crazy?
You see those signs that they've had to put up in some of those underwater caves,
just like, 20 people have died here. And like, 20 people have died
here. It's a dark cave. You will see nothing but a dark cave. And humans, we're like, I got to know what's in the dark cave.
No, I would like see a sign saying 20 people have died here. Proceed at your own caution. I'm like, where's the nearest sports bar?
I'm like, that sign doesn't apply to me because I can't read. I'm definitely a more cautious, frightful person about stuff like that. I guess environmental hazards. Although, you know, ghosts wouldn't, if someone was like, hey, don't go into this cave, it's really fucking haunted, I would be like, I have to meet the ghost. Like, I want to go to those places, not because I think I'm fearless at all. I'm probably chicken shit. I'm just like, oh boy, I need to meet the ghost. Like, people say there's a ghost here, I gotta see it, I gotta know. It would be so cool to experience that. And one day that will result in me turning into like a Lovecraft protagonist, and somebody will visit me in like an asylum somewhere, and I'll be like, I couldn't just, it was Cyclopean.
Discovery Channel has 2 series that I'm totally addicted to. Expedition Unknown, featuring Josh Gates. I mean, I've followed him since his early shows on science, on Sci-Fi Channel. But there's a spinoff show featuring Jessica Chobot called Expedition X, where she is a believer. This other guy, Phil, is a skeptic, and they go explore legends and haunted places. And they run into a lot of ghostly places, and Jessica keeps finding the ghosts. I think you would enjoy that series.
Oh, wow. Wow, 7 seasons. Heck yeah. All right. Add that to my max list.
Oh, it's so crazy. It's a crazy show, but I love it. I love it. I really do.
It's hard not to. And, well, you know, I don't know. It's hard. A lot of those shows are, when you find one that like feels sincere and cool, when you're like, this isn't just like nonsense or like silly jump scares or bullshit, you're like, oh, wow. Okay. Like, I have to protect this. Like, good ghost stuff. My God.
Yeah, I mean, you're literally trying to figure out, okay, something weird happened. Several hundred people agree that something weird happened. Let's try to figure it out. So like I said, UFOs, UAPs, I'm a believer because, you know, what was the line from Armageddon? Begging your pardon, but it's a big ass sky. There's a lot out there. Ghosts, I'm willing to have an open mind. Cryptids, not so much.
Yeah, cryptids, it's unfortunate because cryptids are so fun. Like, cryptids are like one of the funnest ones to believe in, but you're right. Like, we're reaching a point rapidly where it becomes harder and harder to, in like an information super age where everything is constantly filmed and tracked, it does get a little harder to believe in stuff like that. UAPs for sure, obviously, right? You're like, oh, well, like, technology disrupts it. They realize we reach a certain level of technology and they're sneakier, or they have their whatever, a billion reasons, plus it's a big ass sky. But like cryptids, you're like, yeah, I think Chupacabra rules, but I'm really starting to run out of belief that he is a present. Like, he doesn't appear to be real. Somebody would have found something, you know. Bigfoot. We all love Sasquatch. We all think it's cool, mm-hmm. but there's just no way. Like, would have been found.
Yeah, you know what ruined the myth of Sasquatch for me? The episode of $6 Million Man where Sasquatch was really a cyborg, and I'm like, oh man, now I can't see Sasquatch the same way anymore.
Are you a Venture Brothers person?
Not really, no.
Oh, they there's an episode like somewhere in there where $6 Million Man is in there, and he and Sasquatch are like in a relationship, but they claim that the cyborg thing was made up so that they could be together. It's very funny. But I agree. You're just like, all right, well, you get a certain age and you watch some stuff or you read some stuff and you're like, Bigfoot's cool, but I don't believe in it. Like, it's just, it's too silly for me now.
Yep. That totally blew my mind. I'm like, really? You're gonna do that to Sasquatch? And then like the abominable snowman. It's his mountain cousin or something.
Yeah, the skunk ape. Down
in yeah.
Florida. Yeah.
There's a whole lot that could be explained. I used to think that maybe that couldn't happen until the monkeys that were infected with some sort of weird virus escaped from a lab in Northern Virginia and were living in the forest. I'm like, okay.
Oops.
Monkeys carrying a mutated virus could themselves become mutants. And then later on we get the current new Planet of the Apes movies. I'm like, yep, that's where we're going.
But like, that's crazy, because that's like, we made up Sasquatch and then we like accidentally make Sasquatch.
Right? Right? You know, these are things we made. We made these things.
That's like the equivalent of Morbius being real. Like, if you think about Morbius and you're like, what if a guy made a science vampire? And I'm like, that's the stupidest, like a science vampire. That's nonsense. And then what if tomorrow you read in the news, it was like, I don't know, some guy just got the right cocktail of diseases and he's a science vampire now and he's running around and vampires are real.
15 years ago, there was an article in the news that freaked me out. Scientists managed to genetically splice in the genes that cause certain algae and octopus to be bioluminescent into mice. So you had bioluminescent mice.
Yes. Yes.
I'm like, why? What? And suddenly I was imagining the movie Ben with glowing rats. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. This to me though poses the next jump is that, would you get bioluminescent skin?
No.
No?
No. Now, if they did something to, you know, stealth skin where I could just, you know, blend like chameleons do, like, you know, blend into the, now that I would have to sit and pause because that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
To take on the size, the colors, the to blend into your environment, to just be invisible, that would be kind of cool.
Totally. Like full chameleon, like the textures and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm just like the idea of like glowing, flashy humans is exciting to me, but like in like a sci-fi, like transhumanism kind of way, like, look, we're all cyberpunk. We glow.
You have any idea what, how, I mean, that would totally kill like the neon finger paint industry, you know, come on, the neon cosmetics, they would collapse because people could just bioluminescence themselves.
This is the millennial thing, is just trying to kill every industry. Napkins, neon face paint, Applebee's. I've lost track.
Oh my God. I'm thinking like bioluminescent guyliner.
I mean, think about it, you know, just a little bit, a little blue to make it pop. The future's in our hands.
It is. And then with CRISPR, you could tweak it. And it's like, so, you know, next year, you know, that permanent guide liner would be blue. And then like 3 years from now, I'll change it to yellow. And yeah.
The CRISPR stuff is scary. Exciting, but scary. That's like really like fine line futurism stuff, right?
Yeah. I'm waiting for somebody to write a horror story that involves CRISPR gone wrong.
It's weird that like, I wonder if it's one of those, it's the opposite of like how normally you see these cycles where like a bunch of people happen to get into make a zombie movie at the same time. And it's not always copycat where like one person heard about a zombie movie and was like, I gotta make one too. It's like, oh, you know, 5 years ago before they started making, some random movie had something like zombies in it. And everyone was like, oh, zombies should come back. You know, they all got inspired. And it's like that sort of same, like sort of conceptual idea of like, oh, like what if we move into this now? You know?
I'm, like I said, I'm very surprised that once the CRISPR technology started being a thing in the news, I'm like, I was waiting for somebody to pitch a remake of The Fly, except with CRISPR. You know, really? I mean, seriously, you could go deep and dark with that.
How good is The Fly? How good is The Fly? Sorry, I know I shouldn't like waste time on a podcast talking about how good The Fly is, but I love that movie so much.
That's Davis,
my goodness.
That's iconic.
I got into horror because of my Nana. She like showed me movies at like a really young age, and I got really obsessed with them, and we would watch horror movies together. But you know, because my Nana is older, and her generation she's from, I would grow up and she would be like, oh, they remade that, the remake sucks. And so as a kid, like, or getting into sort of my teens, it wasn't until I was like in my teens or in college that I was like, oh no, the thing is John Carpenter's The Thing, not my Nana's The Thing from Another World, which is still cool, but she'd be like, oh, that remake's terrible, it's all gore. And I'm like, you know, like I'm in my 20s and I'm like, actually, Nana, it's like widely considered by many people to be one of the best horror movies ever made. And like, you know, or she, you know, a lot of that stuff, she,
I would love to see, like, hear a debate between you and your Nana about The Thing and Thing from Another World and the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers and 78 Invasion of Body Snatchers, because both of those movies are really good.
That is the other example I was trying to remember. Thank you. She likes the original better, and I like them both too. But I grew up watching the original with her, and she would be like, don't bother with the 70s one. And the 70s one is really good.
It's also an
incredible movie, but I thought it was so funny. She'd be like, oh, don't bother with it, it's boring, it's crappy. And like, well, no, they're both good.
Your Nana rocks.
She's the best. Shout out Kathy Williams. She rules.
So now that we've gone on to like four different tangents, what is on your plate for the next story you're telling? Are you looking at a longer series, the same series length? What's on the plate?
I just released, it doesn't really count, but an older series. I did a webtoon with this artist, Morgan Beam. It's also a watercolor called Wolfsbane. It's about a woman, the last in a long line of werewolf hunters, hunting the last few in a long line of werewolves. There's like a wolf and cub element to it too. And that should be in stores sometime this year. We did a Kickstarter to fund like a collected print edition. So that should be coming out maybe in the fall, I think. We don't have a release date because it's being converted for print, right? The production process. But it that is like another creator owned I'm really proud of. It should be a pretty, should be the equivalent of, I don't know, like 10-ish issues, a pretty big series. And like I said, it's another Morgan Beam, the artist I worked with. She's a genius, and we, it's another horror series I'm really proud of, that should be coming out, Wolfsbane, soon. But in terms of stuff I'm working on, definitely I have quite a few other things in early stages at Top Cow, and Andrea and I are talking about a few other things. But going back to what we talked about before, I'm kicking around some speculative history. Sorry, I'm a screenplay stuff. It's really annoying to be like, no one should ever talk about a screenplay if it's not done. Like, I don't even want to, like, you know, it's like the most annoying thing a person can do. But that speculative history stuff, like, I'm really, really right now hung up on like Saxon Britain, like post King Arthur myth era, mm-hmm. like, you know, the colonization, recolonization of that island by those people, and like what the cultures are like there, and this society that sort of like doesn't understand Rome, but is like, did we used to live in like a golden age? I don't know. And like, to me, that sort of like pre-medieval hellscape is like rich for horror stories. And like, I feel like there's a lot there that I really want to play with in terms of that setting for yeah, getting spooky. Christianity is like crazy at that time period. Like they're like full on like death worship, like early Christianity in that period is like worshiping saints' rotten arms and stuff. Like it's cool. It's like really weird. I don't know. There's a lot there, right? So I don't want to say too much and be annoying, but that's sort of what I'm into right now and telling a story around the early days. And then a few other Marvel, DC, Valiant stuff cool. as well. Working on that's exciting, but not what we're talking about.
And now I'm wondering, it's like the reason places that have been devastated by monstrous volcanic blasts is because those places were obliterated. The ghosts had no place to hang on to and haunt.
The bones got empty. Mm-hmm. Pompeii, the bones were empty.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So where online can people find you and keep track of these stories, these cool stories that I want to read now?
Thank you. I'm probably these days most active, unfortunately, on like Instagram. I'm ry_Katie. Twitter isn't really a thing anymore. But I have a website as well, ryankatiewrites.com, but I don't think it's been updated in like 3 years. I apologize to the people of the world. But in terms of announcements and stuff, my Instagram is usually where I publicly post stuff. And hopefully we move into an era of less social media, so that as much as it's a good thing and we like being able to promote ourselves, I like the idea of not being findable.
Yeah, is that stealth suits?
Yeah, it's just too stealth suits. Stealth skin. This is, yeah. It all comes back. Yeah.
Yep, it does. It does. Well, Ryan, I want to thank you so much for an entertaining series and an entertaining chat about horror and sci-fi and all those fun things.
No, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
And we'll have links to where you can find Ryan for now before he goes full stealth. And and we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod, the free science fiction podcast brought to you by escape artists.
I rippled a welcoming cadence of light beneath my skin, and then, seeing the newcomer was human, made my best approximation of a smile. Welcome to Helixer Transgalactic Lounge.
Each week, one story told well.
She should have never come back to this God's forsaken junk heap of a space station, but she couldn't help but miss it when she was away for too long.
from the most astonishing and visionary storytellers of the genre.
But because time is a trick of the mind, it can be hacked, and we have gotten good at it. We had to.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or find us on the web at escapepod.org. And on Patreon under EA Podcasts.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And like I said, we have links in the show notes to Haunt You to the End, places where you can buy the relatively new trade paperback, and to Ryan's website where you can keep track of what he's working on. Hopefully he'll update it soon for us to enjoy his fascination with ghosts. I think could lead to some really, really cool future stories, and I'm looking forward to seeing what else he comes up with. And that story, Wolfsbane, sounds interesting. I'm going to go check that out. The myriad of ideas we humans can come up with when dealing with concepts beyond what we consider the normal world. The supernatural, the paranormal, the extraterrestrial. Seeing how different people get different ideas of how to approach these concepts, these impossible possibilities, intrigues me. The idea of what he called a psychic sinkhole just sent me on a mental deep dive of possibilities. The one story I mentioned about a cenote in Mexico considered to be haunted, it's the same thing. It's a sinkhole. It's a lake. A lake that's very, very, very deep. And there's caves, there's tunnels off the main, I guess you'd call it the main cave of the cenote. And I don't understand the allure of cave diving, which is really weird because I am pulled in by the allure of shipwreck diving. Mostly, you know, looking for lost pirate treasure ships, because treasure and pirates and treasure, but doing that in caves just to see what's in the caves is baffling to me, confounding. Now, if you were going into an underwater cave believing that, you know, 300 years ago it was not underwater and somebody might have hidden something in there, it's a little bit different. But some of these caves are 200 feet or more underwater. They would not have been above water during the time when a treasure ship might have stopped by and hidden something in there. So I don't get it. I really don't. Besides, we have really, really cool small ROVs now. If you want to map a cave to make it safer for future cave divers, use the ROV first. Don't die doing it. Map the cave. I mean, you have tiny ROVs now that can do laser scans of stuff while you're down there. They're probably expensive as hell. I don't know how much that technology costs. I'm curious about it. I really am. But don't die being the first person in a cave and get lost and be a body that somebody finds 5 years later. That's, please don't. Unless you're consciously trying to create a haunted underwater cave with your ghost. And there I went into ghost territory again. But anyway, what do you think? Let me know. The number is 602-635-6976. Call in, leave a voicemail message, and I'll answer your question as best as I can. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can hit me up on Blue Sky at sliceofscifi.com. Ask your questions there, or just come onto the website, sliceofscifi.com, and leave a question or comment in the discussion section for this episode. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. I'm not sure what the status is of the Google Podcasts. Supposedly, Google is getting rid of their podcasts and switching everybody over to YouTube Music, which is kind of weird because they have YouTube podcasts sitting right there. I'm not sure what the deal is, but I will read up on it when they send me another email giving me a schedule or something to that effect. But if you're listening on Apple or following through Podchaser, please consider leaving us a review or a rating for this show or one of the others we're doing. Let folks know you're enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on YouTube. It's youtube.com/@sliceofscifi. And there is a video version of this interview that will go out to Patreon supporters first and then eventually later on show up on the YouTube channel. So we are trying to provide you with more stuff. There are some upcoming movies that may end up having video reviews for, so keep an eye out there. I'd like to thank everyone who is helping to support things here. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. And if you pick a tier, any tier, you will become eligible for perks. Every month, I pick a winning email address out of the electronic hat. And that person gets to choose from books, DVDs, Blu-rays, 4Ks, review materials that I've gotten for stuff here, and that I can't keep it all. There's a lot of it. And you guys, as supporters and fans, get first dibs at some pretty nice stuff. And you get to choose from which pile of stuff I have currently at my fingertips. If you'd like to support, help make a donation without committing to the monthly pledge, the link you can use is paypal.me/scifisummer. Folks over there are also part of the pool eligible for perks. And another way you can support is through our curated shop, sliceofscifi.net. All of the links there are affiliate links, so purchases made through there are helping to support our efforts here as well. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next time. Take care.